And welcome back to Coast, where we're going to talk about miracles now. Godwink Christmas Stories. Squire Rusnell with us. His wife, Louise Duarte, also wrote the books with him. It's a series of books. And, of course, their website, godwinks.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. In our last hour of the program, we'll take your miracle stories as well, right here on Coast to Coast AM.
Cheryl Jones, your reporter, hoping you're having a great Christmas Eve, and don't forget to leave Santa cookies and milk.
Greetings, everyone. This is technology expert Lauren Weinstein wishing you all a wonderful Christmas Eve.
Welcome back to our Christmas Eve program, and you've got another great program tomorrow night as well on Christmas night. Let me tell you about Squire Rusnell, a very popular speaker, New York Times bestselling author who has coined the term Godwink. Now in mainstream usage, Squire's Godwink stories are a very popular monthly feature on the NBC Today show. As a veteran ABC television news executive, he led Good Morning America to the number one spot and oversaw the acclaimed Schoolhouse Rock series in ABC's after-school specials. Programs under his direction have captured more than 75 Emmy Awards. Squire, that is absolutely amazing. Welcome to the program.
Hi, George. Merry Christmas. Thank you too.
Very
much for having me.
Were you at Good Morning America when you got Dave Murray from St. Louis to be one of the weathercasters there?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, yeah. He was working for me down here in St. Louis and then got picked up by Good Morning America for a couple of years.
And, I was there when David Hartman was host.
Yep.
And I hired Joan London, Spencer Christian, and a few other people like that.
What great days of television.
Oh, they were. We were the little David that came up against the giant Today Show and beat them. First time in history.
It was amazing. And you know what I think catapulted ABC? Because, you know, at the time it was CBS, NBC, NBC, CBS. When they did the series Roots, I think it started to really push that network, didn't it?
That was a key time, no question about it. That and Fonzie, if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
Happy Days.
That's right. They were aggressive doing that. Tell me about how you got involved in the ABC Schoolhouse Rock Show.
Well, I was the first thing I did when I came to the network. I originally started at the ABC affiliate in Chicago, producing morning shows and that kind of thing.
WLS, right?
WLS, yeah. And we had a show there called Bob Kennedy, and it took on the Today Show. And of course, at that time, ABC had no morning show. We took on the giant Today Show, and we beat them in Chicago. So that got the attention of the folks in New York, and they brought me to New York. I took over children's television first, because there was also the group of rabble-rousing mothers in Boston that were making all kinds of trouble about children's television, and so I looked upon that as an opportunity. And they made me the first vice president of children's television at ABC.
Oh, that's so great.
During that period of time, I made friends with the women of Boston. I talked to them a lot, and I became, just diplomatically engaged with the same things they were concerned with. And we put on programs like Schoolhouse Rock, ABC After School Specials.
That's fantastic. Now, when were you at LS? I started
at
LS Detroit
in the late 60s.
Okay.
And it was a great time to be in Chicago.
It was a powerful network, powerful station at the time.
Yeah.
To be sure. Yeah. I know one of my anchor people from Detroit, Terry Murphy, went to LS after the mid-70s, I think early 80s.
And, as a general manager, you mean?
No, as an anchor woman.
Oh, anchor woman. Oh, I got you. Yeah.
Yeah, long
time. Gotcha. Yeah.
Great.
Well, before I was at LS, I was at one of the great 50,000-watt stations on the East Coast, WBZ.
Oh, yeah. Huge.
That's where I actually got my start.
Super. Well, good. And it's going to be fun talking with you tonight. Now, you coined the phrase Godwinks.
Yes.
What does that mean to people?
Well, Godwink is a word that fills a vacancy in the language, because When I was running Good Morning America, George, I would sit in the back of the control room, and whenever I heard a reporter start a story saying, ironically today, I would think, I wonder if this is one of those coincidence stories. And because I always thought there was more to coincidence than coincidence. And when I started talking to people about coincidence stories, they told me that there was no coincidence to coincidence, because they believed that there was something else that was empowering coincidence, something divine. And so I started really searching for coincidence stories to put into a book, but also I started searching for, what do you call it? What do you call a coincidence that isn't a coincidence?
Exactly.
And my wife and I were talking to people. We would pray about it. We spent 6 months just thinking and working on finding the right way to describe these coincidences that weren't coincidence. One day, this little word floated into my mind: Godwink. I thought, hey, that sounds kind of fun. That's kind of like Godspeed, Godsend. It's not threatening, doesn't sound religious. And then I went to my manuscript that I was working on, and I took out every word coincidence, put in Godwinks, and it fit. But even more important, when people started using the word, they put it into the language right away. So now that word, almost 20 years later, believe it or not, it has popped up in a lot of dictionaries, and it's now in the culture. And hey, we have reached a new milestone. We've had two Hallmark movies based on Godwink stories, and that has really pushed the word into the language.
Well, that's great, because I've been looking for 20 years for a word to replace coincidences, because I don't believe they happen either. I think there's something else that makes these incredible things happen.
Yes, I agree with you. Well, you know, if you look at the dictionary definition of a coincidence, it is two amazing events that come together without causal connection. That's a coincidence. Well, if you believe that these events happen because of a divine connection, then that's not without causal connection, that's with causal connection. And so therefore, as I said, what do you call it? So Godwink has filled that vacancy in the language. You know, and it's really surprised me that one of the things I worried about was, when I first started writing this book and using that word, I thought, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a philosopher, I'm not a theologian. Hey, I'm a TV guy. Actually, I'm an old radio guy first, but I'm a TV guy, radio guy. And what do I know? I mean, how do I come up with, what are the pastors going to say when they hear that I've got this word? And so one of the things that has really surprised me, and I have felt honored by, is that all of the great pastors of the world that I have encountered, from Joel Osteen to Pat Robertson to Robert Schuller to whatever, they have all said, hey, attaboy, that's great. We knew that they came from God. We just didn't know what to call them.
Yep, exactly, exactly. And so I'm going to start using Godwinks.
I could. And you know what? Once you see Godwinks, you see them more and more and more. And it's like they're around us all the time. We just haven't developed the eyes to be able to see them. In fact, I've always encouraged people to just make a list and put it on the refrigerator door or something of all the Godwinks that you have. And after a month, you'll be absolutely amazed at how many times you've had an amazing Godwink.
And can Godwinks also be miracles?
Well, I think miracles are, I define them a little differently. I think of, yes, and by the way, they are the same. I mean, I had a miraculous story I'd love to tell you.
Well, please,
at some point tonight or this morning about my son, and there were Godwinks in that story. So miracles and Godwinks go together, and prayer goes together. As a matter of fact, people ask me all the time, well, how do I get more Godwinks? And one of the most important ways is to talk to the navigator. I say that we are on this incredible GPS, God's positioning system.
Huh.
And how do you program your GPS? You talk to the navigator.
Yep.
And when you talk to the navigator, he communicates back to you, not in a human voice, but through amazing experiences that could only come from divine origin. God winks.
Tell us the story of your son. We're going to go through a lot of stories with you tonight.
Great. Well, my son, actually, he still believes in Santa Claus.
I still do.
He's 36 years old.
I do, too, and I'm over 36.
I love that, George. But he lives in a community outside of Houston where we are right now, and we are it's a community for disabled adults called Brookwood Community. It's an amazing place. But when he was born, his mother and I went into the hospital always thinking, as you do when you go into the hospital and you're going to have a baby,
mm-hmm.
all the exciting things are going to happen that could come out the other end that are you're going to give away cigars and you're going to call up everybody with excitement. You do not expect that the doctor is going to say,
I am sorry. Oh, my God.
Your baby was born in cardiac arrest.
Oh, God.
If he survives, he probably will have so much brain damage that he won't be able to communicate if he lives.
If he lives.
And so that was a turning point in my life because I had always believed there was something up there, somebody up there, but I didn't have a relationship with that somebody. And his mother had the baby at 8:20 in the morning with cesarean section. She couldn't even see him because she was, she couldn't get up and go into the neonatal clinic. And I went into that neonatal clinic at Lenox Hill Hospital in New York, and I pledged that I was going to pray for this child around the clock for him to survive. And I would look into that incubator. There were 18 different tubes and wires coming out of his body, including this one tube that came out of his throat. And I would look at the machine, and the machine standing there was counting the amount of oxygen that he was taking in on his own and how much breathing the machine was doing for him. It showed the machine was doing 95% of the breathing.
Without the machine, he'd be a goner.
That's exactly right. Without the machine, he would not exist. I prayed that this child would survive. And I have to tell you, there was a bit of a miracle that happened just before that. It's an angelic experience. I know you've been talking about
mm-hmm.
that this night.
Yep.
But there was a nurse who had come up to me when I was looking into the incubator, and one of the things I was thinking about was, where do you bury a child in New York City when you haven't figured out where you're going to bury yourself?
Oh, God.
And this nurse came up to me and said, have you thought of taking a picture of your child? I looked at her. I thought it was kind of an odd question.
Sure.
My child had 18 different tubes and wires.
Yeah, who wants to see that kind of a picture, right?
Yeah. And so she said, I came into this hospital a year ago. I gave birth to a baby. It was stillborn. I left the hospital with no evidence I ever had a baby. And I thought, wow, I think this is a wake-up call. This baby is not stillborn. This baby is alive. I need to be asking the navigator for assistance to save this baby. I need to ask God, if there is a God up there, I need to ask him to save this baby. That's what I need to do. And so I pledged to pray for him around the clock. I didn't know whether or not prayer really worked or not. I thought it did. Everybody said it did. I didn't know. And it was about 5:00 in the morning, and all of a sudden his body started shaking.
Oh.
And I called over a nurse, and she said, oh, my gosh, she's having a seizure. I'm going to go get the doctor. She ran for the doctor. And as I looked at the baby, I noticed that there was a dark substance that was moving through that transparent tube that was coming from his lungs, down his throat. And the doctors had told me that what he had suffered from was meconium, which means that he breathed in while he was in utero his own body wastes.
Ah, okay.
And his lungs were clogged.
So you were seeing that. You were seeing that coming out of him.
I know. And so all of a sudden there was this dark substance moving through the tube, moving through the tube, moving through the tube. And he was still shaking, and that was moving through the tube. And I looked at that machine that had been doing 95% of the breathing, and it went down to 90%, down to 85, down to 75. And by the time he was 48 hours old, about 8 o'clock in the morning, he was breathing 50-50 on his own, and the doctors were calling him the miracle baby.
Wow.
Lenox Hill Hospital. I knew then that there was some mysterious connection between prayer, a communication to an unseen power, and miracles.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
So that was one of the most extraordinary God winks in my life.
I've got to ask you, Squire, how did he grow? Is he still with us?
He is now 36 years of age. And if that's the boy who believes in Santa Claus. He had
brain damage.
He can't read or write because it's frontal lobe damage that was done to him with a lack of oxygen. But he can sing. He loves to sing. He loves to sing country western songs. He can sing any Kenny Rogers song ever done. And has a great, remarkable memory because, you know, when you can't do one thing like read, you develop another thing like memory.
Did he have any brothers and sisters?
He had two older sisters, and so we are all gathered here right now for a Christmas morning outside of Houston.
That is amazing. What a great story that is. There's something out there. You tapped into it, and it probably changed your life, I would guess.
Oh, it did. That was the threshold of my faith. I stepped across that threshold that morning at 5 o'clock in the morning when I cried out, and I made the decision that I was going to stop figuring out where I was going to bury my child and start asking God for help for my child to live.
And you now also have what is called divine alignment. What is that?
Well, divine alignment is the evolution of the thesis of God winks. So that God winks are these little experiences that aren't coincidence, but they come from divine origin. And divine alignment is parallel, a parallel thesis to God winks, because we've all had divine alignment.
We sure have. Squire, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk more about that and also some of the incredible stories tied into God winks. The name of this book is called God Wink Christmas. He's working on another one. We'll tell you about that. That's going to be published later on as well. And we will take your calls next hour here on Coast to Coast AM. So sit back and enjoy a little Christmas music. We'll be right back. We're going to be back with Squire Rusnell in just a moment to talk more about his work, God Wink, Christmas Stories. And, of course, you join in next hour with your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM.
Hello, everyone. This is Earth Explorer Brooks Agnew wishing everyone a very Merry Christmas Eve.
Paranormal investigator Joshua P. Warren here, just hanging out, waiting for Santa Claus. Happy Christmas Eve, everyone.
Great vignettes from those guests. Great vignettes. The late Glenn Kimball would appear on our program quite often with some incredible stories. And he was able to do some recordings, of course, before he passed on. This one explaining the meaning of the Christmas tree.
This is Glenn Kimball with Lost Treasures from History. How did a fir tree merge with our modern Christmas celebrations? Some have suggested that St. Boniface, the English missionary to Germany in the 8th century AD, started the custom of using a tree in the celebration of Christmas. Others point to early Egyptian worship of fir trees. However, the fir tree celebrations on December 25th didn't originate in Egypt. Who chose the first fir trees for celebration, and what did that have to do with December 25th? Back in a moment. Nimrod from the Tower of Babel fame was born on December 25th, around 2200 BC. An existing Babylonian stone carving depicts him with wings on his back, holding a fir tree in one hand and a flying deer in the other. He married his mother Semiramis, or Esther, after his father mysteriously died. After Nimrod's murder, his mother claimed that a full-grown fir tree emerged from a stump overnight, and that his spirit would continue to fly around the tree on his birthday every year, leaving presents beneath. She hung round balls on the tree representing eggs, which was the promise of fertility if the people of Nimrod would continue to worship him. For more treasures in history, come to KimballCollege.com.
That's the late Glenn Kimball. Thank you, Glenn, and the family of Glenn Kimball, keeping his memory alive. We're back with Squire Rusnell, his book, Godwink Christmas Stories, that he wrote with his wife, Louise Duarte. And we were talking about divine alignment, Squire. Let's let you get back into that.
Well, thank you. Well, divine alignment, it goes hand in hand with Godwinks. And because we've all had these kinds of Godwinks, we happen to be at the right place at exactly the right moment for us to encounter a person or an event that changes the course of our life or changes the course of our thinking, changes our lives altogether. And divine alignment is so amazing. It happens all the time and we just shrug it off. But we never stop to think, what caused us to be at that moment? What caused that person to be there at that moment, not 5 minutes before and not 3 minutes later, but at that exact moment, for her to walk into the room and for you to be there and for you to fall in love with her or him, mm-hmm. or find the job or get the pathway to the new career or whatever. And as we go back and look at ourselves through an archaeological dig into our own past, we will see that we've had divine alignment at every moment. And if you connect the dots from one to another, at every one of those dots, that's a Godwink. Something amazing happened. There wasn't a coincidence. It had to have come from divine origin.
Tell us a few stories of Godwink again.
Well, one of my favorite Godwink stories involves famous actress Diane Lane. Diane Lane, who was in Unfaithful, Secretariat, and movies like that, she was in New York to promote a new movie. And she was sitting in the back of a limo on her way to the Charlie Rose TV studio near Columbus Circle. And she was just forlornly looking out the window at all of those taxi cabs, yellow cabs, dashing this way and that way. It was a sea of yellow cabs. And she remembered her dad. As a matter of fact, she was feeling fresh grief because her dad had recently died. And his favorite TV show was Charlie Rose. He used to watch it together.
Huh.
Her dad brought her up, took her to school every day and picked her up every day and helped her with her career. Wouldn't he have loved to have been with her that day, going to Charlie Rose to be in the studio, sitting there as his little girl was being interviewed? Her mind went back to when she was a little girl, standing at the curb after school, looking into that sea of yellow cabs for that one cab, the one with his number on it, 6F 99. That was his medallion number. And sooner or later, that cab would emerge, pull up, the door would fling open, and her father would say, "Hop in, princess. Where to? I'll take you anywhere." Oh, they had such a great relationship. Oh, she wished her dad was with her today. And at that moment, her black limo pulled to the curb in front of the Charlie Rose studio, and she stepped out, and she looked up, and her heart leapt. Pulling up right in front of their car was cab number 6F99.
Jeez. Unbelievable.
Now you say, what are the odds of that? Well, there are 15,000 cabs in the city of New York, not counting Lyft and Uber and all those things.
That's right. That's right.
What are the odds? Well, what are the odds that that particular cab would arrive at that particular curb at that particular moment to lift her spirits? Those are unbelievable odds. But when we talk about God, there are no odds. And when we talk about God winks, there are no odds.
Do you see, Squire, the difference between that and synchronicity?
Well, I don't think there is a lot of difference. Certainly, synchronicity is a thesis of coincidence, and synchronicity is certainly something that I have always respected, you know, from Carl Jung. But I have to tell you, George, I'm the guy who brought you Schoolhouse Rock. I'm the guy who was a TV guy. And my thesis about Godwinks is very simply that they come from divine origin. Now, Carl Jung's parents, I believe, were theologians. But when I read what Carl Jung wrote one time, he said, synchronicity designates the parallelism of time and meaning between psychic and psychophysical events. And I sat there and read that 10 times and said, what the heck is he talking about? But I know that there are smarter people than me that fully understand that. But back to simplicity, I love Schoolhouse Rock because it was 3 minutes of simplicity on Saturday morning about how a bill goes through Congress. And simplicity for me, and that was one of the life lessons out of Schoolhouse Rock, is telling stories that are simple, but they have a direct meaning and something that you can take away from it.
Have you concluded at this point, Squire, what causes these connections?
Well, I believe that it is a divine connection, and mm-hmm. I believe it is evidence within our natural world of something that starts in the supernatural world. The ancient scriptures, the Bible, said that there will be signs and wonders. But I think that Godwinks are supernatural messages that pierce the veil and come into the natural world. So, yes, I call them God, but Godwinks cross every boundary. They cross every language. The books, by the way, are in 33 languages. There are 12 books there are 11 now, and the 12th one is in the hopper. But the Godwinks cross every single language and every so-called religion. You don't have to be a Christian, a Catholic, a Jew, or whatever to believe in Godwinks. You can be an agnostic. You can just believe that there is something up there bigger than you. And Godwinks are now a power source for you. Once you tap into that awareness and you start seeing the Godwinks more and more, it's like discovering there's a handrail on that shaky stair that you've been on. you've been going up and down that stairway, and it's shaky, and it scares the dickens out of you, but now you got a handrail, something to hold on to. That's a God wink.
Now, that book you said is in the hopper. Is that God wink dog winks?
Yeah.
What's that all about?
God wink dog winks. Well, of course, all my books are, people say, which one should I read first? Well, it doesn't matter. And they're all filled with stories, and so it doesn't matter whether you start in the beginning or the end. But all the books are about God winks, these amazing true stories that happen to real people just like you and me. But dog winks are all stories, or about 30 stories in this book, that are about dogs at the center. And so... In fact, the book had it was really pushed along by a story that I heard about, and actually my wife heard about it, and she told me to go follow up on it. I did, and it was a story about a state police canine unit in Providence, and so that story I told on my monthly segment on the Today Show, and then that story got picked up by Netflix, and it's in the scripting stage right now for our first Netflix movie that's going to come out in September at the same time the book comes out.
Oh, that's
so
exciting.
This story is called God Wink, Dog Wink, Ruby. Now, Ruby was a puppy, Australian Shepherd and Border Collie. And if you know those dogs, they are both very, very smart and very high energy.
Yes, and want to please their master, don't they?
Yeah, yes. And they're dogs that need a job, you know?
Yeah.
And so this dog, Ruby, was at the SPCA in Providence, Rhode Island. There was a trainer, volunteer trainer, a woman by the name of Pat Inman, who would come into the SPCA, and she would kind of groom the puppies for their adoption process. You know, if you were going to go out on an adoption interview, you want to put your best paw forward, and that's what she would do for the dog. She would kind of teach him to do that. Well, Ruby was very difficult, but so engaging. She loved this dog, and Ruby was ready for her first adoption interview to be sent home with a new family. Well, it didn't take very long. Ruby was back. They said Ruby was unmanageable. And that kept happening. Pat kept working with Ruby, and Ruby kept coming back. And she said, Ruby, you know what happens? You know, if you can't be adopted, they have a policy here. Well, Ruby didn't know. And after the fifth time, Ruby was on the list for euthanasia.
Oh, geez.
In 2 hours.
In 2 hours?
Inman got the call. 2 hours. And somebody at the SPCA called her and said, you know, Ruby's on the list. And she said, you can't do that with this dog. This dog is so smart. We got to do something to save this dog. Now, she couldn't take the dog home herself because she had two dogs that she knew they'd be fighting all the time. They were and the antithesis kind of dogs. And she also had a very troublesome issue with a teenage boy, and she just had problems in the household. She couldn't take the dog herself. Well, anyway, she pleaded with the SPCA. She said, can't you call the canine corps at the state police? Maybe they'll take Ruby. And the head of that she was talking to, the head of the security department, said, you know what? I've been here 10 years. They've never taken one of our dogs. They get their dogs from Czech Republic. They spend $15,000 for the specially bred dogs for search and rescue. So she left, and she decided she wasn't going to go back to work at SPCA again. She just didn't want to know what happened. She just pulled down that curtain. And the guy did call the commander of the canine unit, and he did say that they had a very smart dog named Ruby. And the canine unit guy, Matthew Sorella, said, oh, I'll come out next week. He said, no, you got to come out in the next 2 hours.
Right, the dog will be good. The dog will be gone.
And the dog won't be here. You got to come out. So Matt Zarella said, okay, I'll come out. He came out, and he saw what Pat Inman had seen, that Ruby had a wonderful smartness about her.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a cop who had been bugging him, a trooper who had been bugging him for years to get into the canine unit, but they never had a partner to partner up with him because they didn't have one of those big $15,000 dogs in the budget. And so he takes Ruby back, puts her on a leash, takes a bag of dog food, calls up Officer Dan O'Neill and says, come on over here, trooper. He said, here's your new partner. She needs a little training, a little bit of an understatement.
Stay with us right on that spot, Squire. We'll come back and talk more about Ruby, because I have a feeling Ruby may have saved the officer, but that's just a guess. We'll come back and also take phone calls in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM.